will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. And now, here's our host, Chris Arnzen.
Good afternoon, Long Island, New York, Connecticut, and those listening internationally over the Internet. This is Chris Arnzen, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron, wishing you all a very Merry Christmas on this beautiful Christmas Eve here on Long Island. We all know that angels played a central role in the Christmas story, visiting both Mary, Joseph, and the shepherds to announce the coming birth of the Messiah. But what role do angels play today? Does the role of angels today include serving as ministers of God to rescue some of us from harm's way or from certain death? Our guests today believe they certainly do. Our guests today are Army Specialist Brian Otis and his father, Pastor John Otis, to discuss their book, Delivered by Angels, God's Providence for an American Soldier in Iraq. If you'd like to join us on the air today with a question for Army Specialist Brian Otis or his father, Pastor John, you can join us on the air by calling 631-321-WNYG, 631-321-WNYG. Joining me in the studio to co-host the program today are Pastor Mike Plugman and his daughter, Jennifer Plugman. If you'd like to join us on the air, once again, our number is 631-321-WNYG, 631-321-WNYG. Why not call family and friends during the station break and have them tune in to 1440 AM on the dial if they live on Long Island, the Bronx, Yonkers, or the coast of Connecticut. But they can hear the program anywhere on the planet Earth via live streaming over the Internet at www.wnygspiritofny.com, wnygspiritofny.com. They can also hear the program live via live streaming at sharpens.blogspot.com. That's sharpens.blogspot.com. We'll be right back after these messages with Army Specialist Brian Otis and Pastor John Otis, authors of Delivered by Angels, God's Providence for an American Soldier in Iraq.
Clients come to us, and they're usually in a state of shock and confusion. They've just experienced the unthinkable. Their life is falling apart. They have no money. They have lost their means of getting money. Their health is gone.
When you've been injured, you deserve a champion, because the other guys already have one.
The insurance companies wage a war of attrition, so if you cannot wait for your case to come to court, and it takes a while, you end up settling for a meager amount because you can no longer endure the fight.
Look to the personal injury attorney with a heart for helping people.
We will look to get them living arrangements, hook them up with a pastor or a church, build a support system around them. We'll get them medical care. We provide a comprehensive situation where we meet the needs of the whole person, not just represent them in court.
When you've been injured, your champion is Dan Buttafuoco. There are no upfront fees. The only fee is after you win your case. For a free consultation, call the law offices of Dan Buttafuoco at 1-800-NOW-HURT. 1-800-NOW-HURT.
Spirit New York with WNYG.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and if you've just tuned us in, our topic today is the book Delivered by Angels, God's Providence for an American Soldier in Iraq. And our guests are authors, Army Specialist Brian Otis and Pastor John Otis. Before we introduce our guests today, I'd like to, first of all, plug another program that we're going to be doing this Friday with my co-hosts today who are in studio with me, Pastor Mike Plugman and his daughter, Jennifer Plugman, who is the author of A Higher Trust. Jennifer, tell us briefly about this book and what we're going to be discussing this Friday in Iron Sharpens Iron.
A Higher Trust is a suspense novel about a teenager who learns about criminal activity occurring inside her high school. As she is thrust into the center of a federal investigation, she learns what it means to present herself a living sacrifice to the Lord. It's an adventure novel that is chock full of surprises and biblical principles.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to that interview, and make sure you mark your calendars for that this Friday, an interview on the novel A Higher Trust by Jennifer Plugman, and she and her father are in the studio with me today as well to interview Army Specialist Brian Otis and Pastor John Otis. Quoting from the Triumphant Publications website, "We serve a great God who still intervenes for his glory. Delivered by Angels, God's Providence for an American Soldier in Iraq is based on true events. From May 2005 to May 2006, Army Specialist Brian Otis of the Georgia National Guard was deployed to Iraq. During this time, Brian truly walked through the valley of the shadow of death on numerous occasions. From a human perspective, Brian should have died several times, but God's mercy and grace were wonderfully displayed toward him. The book chronicles his year-long deployment. It demonstrates the personal struggles and challenges that Brian faced as a Christian soldier, dealing with the loss of friends, the prospects of his own death, and the pain of having to kill the enemy. Rarely does the public have the opportunity to look into the soul of a Christian soldier during combat. It's my great pleasure to have you as a guest, Army Specialist Brian Otis.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris. Thank you so much.
And it's also great to have you back in the studio, well, not in the studio, but on the program, Pastor John Otis, the co-author of Delivered by Angels.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
Well, I understand before we even get into the book, Brian, you'd like to send a greeting to all of our troops who are serving overseas.
Yes, I just want to send my heartfelt thanks to all our men and women serving abroad overseas, especially in Iraq and Afghanistan and other parts of the country. I know what it's like to be there. I know what it's like to be away from your loved ones, and it's a truly trying thing to do because you know they're thinking and praying about you. But, you know, I just want to send my thank you to them, and God bless them, and God spare them from anything that happened to them, and get them home soon so they can see their family and their loved ones as soon as possible.
Yeah, and that's especially important during the Christmas season. And you never know who's listening because of the miracle of the Internet. We may even have soldiers in Iraq listening or other places overseas. But tell us something about why you wrote this book with your father, Brian.
Well, we wrote the book to show God's providence and God's the divine hand in any situation possible. Combat is the most stressful, most just mentally draining and physically draining thing possible. And I was sent to Iraq to do, I believe, a very terrible thing. And as a Christian, I struggled with a lot of different things on the aspect of what to do, what not to do while I'm there. And the reason we wanted to write this book is to show that, you know, God spared me from a lot of different horrible things that happened to me. My life was constantly in danger, whether or not I was out on patrol or I was just laying in my bed. It was a 24/7 nightmare, I guess you could say. And he protected not only myself, but my entire company. And I wanted to show and tell people that, you know, he is out there. He protects us. He makes sure that his people are taken care of. And I believe that's why he spared me, so I can come back and tell this story. I can tell people, you know, because some people don't think he's out there and he's, you know, looking over us and protecting us. And I'm living proof of it is true. He's out there and he has angels guarding us every second of the day, no matter what we do on the at home or overseas if anybody in the military.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I wrote the book, or me and my father wrote the book, is to show that he is looking out for us and he is protecting us in every walk of life.
Uh-huh. We actually already have a caller on the line. We have Mary in West Babylon, Long Island. Welcome to Iron Sharpens Iron, Mary.
Oh, hi, Chris. How you doing? Thank
Good.
You for accepting my call. And I'd like to ask, my husband is a Vietnam veteran. And that war really wasn't accepted. The veterans really accepted with open arms when they came back. How are the Iraqi vets being treated? And how do you cope with that spiritually if they are not really accepted very well back at home?
Mary, could you take your answer off the radio? Because we're getting a lot of phone calls trying to get through. And I want to let you know that you, since you're a first-time caller, you are winning today a $25 gift certificate to the Village Lantern Restaurant in Lindenhurst, Long Island, a new German restaurant.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So if you could hang up and get your answer off the air, because we have a lot of people online trying to get through.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Brian and Pastor John?
Well, first, you know, I was there from May of 05 to May of 06. And I ironically was able to give my Christmas leave from Iraq, or my leave on Christmas Day. And I came home 2 days later, and the people were very welcome for me and the fellow soldiers I came home with. They clapped when we came through the airport. They come up and give us hugs and shake our hands and thank you for what you're doing. We really appreciate it. And that was a great encouragement, knowing to be in harm's way, that there are people out there. Now, there are some people in this world, in this country, that don't view the war very well, and they don't do that. And I've had some negative comments towards it, but, you know, it's always going to be like that. But I would say 80% of when I experienced it, and since I've been home for good, I've experienced a very welcome and a thanks for it. And I'm very appreciative of that, and I know my family is very appreciative of that, because I know my father has gotten comments from people, well, tell your son thank you, and you know, thank you for everything you've done for us, you know. And it means a lot to me and for all the troops to know that we are supported back home, whether or not the news portrays it very well or what they do. The people, I believe, truly support us and what we do.
Well, it seems to me that there's been a radical change since the Vietnam War, because even many Americans who disagree, maybe even strongly oppose the war in Iraq, they are not disrespecting the soldiers who are serving there,
mm-hmm.
as they did in the during the Vietnam War and afterward.
Well, I think from Vietnam, a lot of people realized the comments and the negative attitude towards troops from Vietnam caused a lot of problems with the troops and with families. And I think, I don't know for sure, but I think maybe they realize that, and they know whether or not they, you know, we don't have a say in going over there and fighting. We answer to a higher, you know, officer says you got to go, or the president, you got to go and fight. We have to do that. We accept that. And I think the people realize that we don't have a choice in it. You know, we have to go. We have to do what we've been trained to do. And they accept and appreciate what we do for them. Now, I think maybe their beef is on another level with other people, but for as a soldier, on the soldier level, the people do respect us and they do love us and do thank us.
Yes, and Jennifer Plugman served, as I announced earlier, in the United States Air Force, and didn't you enlist because of the Iraqi conflict? Jennifer?
I actually enlisted right before September 11th.
Oh, okay.
So it was just shortly before all the conflicts, but it wasn't a decision I made because of it.
Okay. And did you have any negative feedback from anybody, either during your serving our country or after coming home?
I found very much people were appreciative toward me for the most part. I did have some people hassle me about the issue of the war, but they separated it from me as a person and the war as an issue.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I love you, extend my greetings. I failed to do so earlier to my co-host in studio, also Pastor Mike Plugman of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Bohemia, Long Island. Good afternoon, brother. It's good to have you back in the studio.
It's good to be with you again, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Pastor John Otis, I don't know what your feelings were toward the conflict in Iraq, but tell us something about what you went through having your son enlist and also having your son serve over there in combat.
Brian and I have had many a talk concerning the military and a Christian's obligation to the military. Before 9/11, Brian has always been somewhat enamored with the military, and I knew that. And when 9/11 occurred, that outraged many people, and I know that was a motivating factor for Brian to join some branch of the military, being the National Guard. So when he did that, we talked about what a Christian's obligation was, and he fully, I believe, understood that. And while he was over there, my wife and I, Christine, we simply accepted this was God's providence, I mean, his working in Brian's life. And I would say for probably 2 months, we probably did not realize it was as dangerous as it was turning out to be. And once Brian began to email to us some of the things that he was experiencing, I began to realize this is somewhat very serious, and therefore we needed to encompass as many people praying as possible. And so I notified not only your churches nearby, but all over the country. And Brian has a tremendous amount of prayer support. And I can say, just generally speaking, that though we knew that Brian was in a very dangerous area, we had confidence that God was in control. And as God is our witness, we never did lose any sleep over Brian. That doesn't mean that we weren't very concerned, but we knew he was in the Lord's hands no matter what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brian, you've obviously got to tell us about some of these miraculous events that occurred that spared you from death. Start with one in particular that comes to mind. In fact, if you could wait for 1 second, we've got another caller on the line, and we'll have him ask his question first so we don't keep him hanging. And then you could start with your accounts. We have Joseph in West Babylon, Long Island. Welcome to Iron Sharp as Iron, Joseph.
Yes.
Great to
Hello.
Yes, great to have you on the program, Joseph.
Fine, thank you. I'd like to ask a question as far as being in Iraq, whether or not he is in favor of, you know, second or third tours, or would there be a better possibility of reenactment of the draft?
Okay, did you hear that, Brian?
Yeah, I did hear it. The draft, the way I see it is the military is only cut out for certain people. I believe if you want to be in the military and you feel you're good for the military, join the military. The draft is something that takes people who don't want necessarily to be put in harm's way, don't want to be in that structure of a lifestyle, into that lifestyle and basically being bossed and go. And some people don't like that. And being in combat, I want guys, every single person next to me on the front line in combat that want to be there, that want to look out for me as a brother, that will take a bullet for me. I don't want a guy who's going to question motives whether or not he's there or not.
Mm.
I want him to 100% be there. So in my opinion, I don't think we should reinstitute the draft. It's about the two or three tours. It's sad to see it because I have close friends that are on their second and third tour over there. And I, in fact, will probably redeploy to Afghanistan for a second tour. But I love what I do. God gave me a gift. And I believe this is one of the best ways I can use that gift. Now, there are people who don't like the military who enlist just for whatever reason. But I don't believe we should have a draft because I don't want people who don't want to be there next to me.
Excellent answer. Thank you very much, Joseph. And you're also going to be receiving a free $25 gift certificate to the new Village Lantern restaurant. For the finest in old world German cuisine. There are newest sponsors to Iron Sharpens Iron located right in Lindenhurst on Willwood Avenue, just north of the Long Island Railroad overpass. And they are owned by the Black Forest Bakery in Lindenhurst, Long Island. And make sure you stop by the Black Forest Bakery for all of your dessert needs this Christmas and New Year's if you're not baking yourself. But thanks a lot, Joseph, for calling in.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Well, yes, we have to go to a break right now. There were other people trying to get through earlier. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question for Brian or John Otis, our number is 631-321-WNYG, 631-321-WNYG. We'll be right back with Brian and John Otis after these messages.
Pastor in Azerbaijan will spend 2 years in prison after a court rejected his appeal to have a prison sentence overturned. Pastor Zahar Balaev was given a 2-year prison sentence earlier this year for holding church services.
We are stunned at the result the court handed down. We don't know what to do. It's a tragedy for his wife and children. It was all over in 2 minutes. And Zahar's son is distressed, complaining there is no hope and no law in Azerbaijan.
Reading the Voice of the Martyrs monthly newsletter allows you to stay up to date on the persecution of Christians around the world. Your faith will be inspired as you see people like Balaev who are willing to give all for Christ. Call 875-VOICE to request a free newsletter. That's 875-VOICE. Call 875-VOICE. The Voice of the Martyrs is a Christian nonprofit organization.
celebrate Christmas, remember to give your children the greatest gift of all, the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm Charles Stanley wishing you a Merry Christmas.
In touch with Charles Stanley, Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 a.m. on the Spirit of New York, WNYG.
Hi, my name is S.K. 2 Nance. I'm here to wish a Merry Christmas to the Malloy family in Wandish, New York.
Get the spirit. The spirit of New York.
Welcome back. Brian Otis, if you could share with us one of the more remarkable occurrences where you believed the Lord used angels to rescue you from harm's way or death.
Absolutely, Chris. I mean, there were so many different instances when I was there, and I'm trying to figure out the best one to tell you that shows God's absolute providence in his hand in it. I think the best one I can think of was during the Ramadan. The Ramadan, as people know, is their holy month. They fast, and the insurgency picks up their attacks a lot during Ramadan because they believe, I don't want to get into that, but it was during Ramadan, and we, on a normal patrol walking around, just a president's patrol in a small city right outside our base. And we were a mechanized infantry unit, which is a Bradley, and when the ramp got down and we got out, we just started, you know, regrouping, getting together, and we started our walk. We were walking through a marketplace, and I just remember it was just such a beautiful day. It was a clean, crisp air, no cloud in the sky, just the perfect temperature. And it just gave me a good feeling. And we were walking through the marketplace. It's a very crowded marketplace, you know, and you have to try and keep a distance from people because you don't want them pulling things off your vest or anything. And so we had to try and keep a distance, but we started noticing a kind of a mood swing in the people, and they were just naturally staying away from us, and that kind of threw up a red flag in a lot of our minds, especially in my mind. And I remember turning, I was about fourth in line in the formation, and I remember turning my head and looking at my buddy behind me. When I turned around, that's when we heard gunfire. It was right on top of us. It was really loud, but right when I heard the gunfire, it felt like a sledgehammer hit me square in the chest, and it just knocked me on the ground. And at that moment in time, I basically said, this is it, my life's over. And I was just looking at the sky, and it's just, I couldn't breathe. I just couldn't do anything. I basically accepted the fact that I was going to die. I was hoping it was going to be quick. And I remember our medic's face coming over my head and goes, it didn't go through, get up. So I kind of dragged over to a wall and I looked down at my vest and it hit about 2 inches below the top rim of my vest, right where your sternum would be, right next to your heart.
Huh.
And it hit right there. And we believe it cracked the rib, but... And I sat there, and 2 other guys had gotten hit, too. One had gotten hit in the lower vest, another one had the bullet grazed off his helmet. And we were all sitting there, and we were kind of joking and laughing about it as we were catching our breath and calming down. We were kind of laughing about it. It was like, wow, that was a close one.
Wow.
But it was just the providence in that aspect was is that the bullet hit on the one step where I would have survived. If I was one step farther, the bullet would have hit me in the throat or in the face.
Oh, wow.
If I was 1 or 2 steps back, it would have been below the vest and hit me in the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that one particular step the bullet hit. And it was just, you know, it doesn't set in for a few days. And a few days later when I started thinking about it, and I was like, wow, that was amazing. The fact that there was an angel right there guiding that bullet, you know, to my chest, and but missed and hit the plate, and it boggles my mind to this day, and I will never forget it. And well, I remember not telling my parents that story for a long time. And I remember when I was home on Christmas leave, my leave around Christmas, I was visiting in Texas, and I kind of accidentally dropped the story bomb on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they both kind of looked at me with this suppressed look on their face. What happened? I was like, great. I didn't want to tell my parents. I didn't want them to worry and, you know, lose sleep or get really upset. But I had already, you know, told them. And my dad just said, he goes, That's amazing. God, you know, put his hand on you right then and there.
Praise
God.
That
was like the fourth time that it happened. Well, not that happened, but the fourth time I was spared from death up to that point. And that was only 5 or 6 months into my tour.
Wow. Well, praise God. We also have another caller on the line, Denise from Lindenhurst, Long Island. Or Dennis, I'm sorry. Dennis from Lindenhurst, Long Island.
Hello.
Hey, how are you, Dennis?
Good, good.
You're definitely not a Denise.
No, sir. Not yet.
Yes, the question, Dennis.
The question is, you know, feeling on the protest under the Iraqi and war.
My feeling on the protest? My feeling on the protest is we live in a country where many men, the way I look at it is freedom isn't free. Freedom is paid for by blood of brave men and women throughout all of history that had to pay. Our country is set up in a structure to where it's freedom of speech, where people can protest if they feel they have a right and they deserve feeling for it, they can protest. That's their belief. That's what they want to say, and that's why this country is so great, because they can say that.
Now, how do you feel about it?
They're wrong, but that's my belief.
And how do you feel about the protester?
What's that?
I think he just said that he believed that they were wrong, but he believed it was their right to protest. Isn't that what he said, Brian?
Right. I know how he feels because I'm a Vietnam vet, and when I was in Vietnam, that's all you seen back here, everybody protesting, and you felt like you weren't part of the society anymore. So I
want to send my thank you to you, sir, for your service in Vietnam. I know it takes men like you to serve then, so men like me can serve now.
That's right.
Well, thanks a lot for calling, Dennis, and you're winning a free $25 gift certificate to the Village Lantern Restaurant in Lindenhurst.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you. And you too, Dennis. I'd like to have Pastor Plugman chime in briefly. When Pastor Plugman, my co-host, you had a daughter serving in the armed forces, in the Air Force in particular. What goes through the mind of a parent with a Christian parent with especially a daughter in the service?
Yeah, it wasn't something that was always equally easy on her mom and I. Certainly, you know, as a daughter going into the military, but we had seen Jennifer for many years interact in the context of the Civil Air Patrol. During the summertime, she had gone to encampments on military bases, and we had met military people, and we'd seen the mindset that Jennifer had, and being strong in her faith, you have to take these things on an individual basis, and with her, we, both my wife and I, felt that the hand of the Lord was in it, and we've supported her in it all the way. The aspect of danger came a little bit closer to us when she went to South Korea and lived for a year under the threat of Kim Jong-il in the north. And, you know, these things have brought a little bit closer home to you then. But my wife and I were spared. Certainly we have not been through anything like the Otis family has been. My daughter never, you know, was in a combat situation and never was in a hostile environment, you know, other than just the normal trials of being a Christian and often an adverse kind of environment.
Pastor John Otis, if you have any regrets at any time of your son, over your son enlisting.
Not really, Chris. The National Guard was somewhat of a compromised position between us. I essentially, as a pastor, told Brian that when you join the military, you are a servant now of the United States government. And therefore, if we ever go to war, then you don't have much choice. But then I also said, Brian, your allegiance always is to the Lord Jesus Christ first, and to the United States government. And at any time, if it would become clear cut that you were having to choose morally to do something that was questionable as a Christian, then you're obligated to obey Christ first and bear whatever those consequences are. And so we had numerous conversations over that. And so when he went, we talked, and I remember giving him a letter on the send-off day, and it happened to be on my birthday, on my 54th birthday, we sent him off to Iraq. And I wrote him a letter as a father trying to think, what would a father say to his son that he's sending him off to a war? We have that letter in our book, and Brian and I were talking about that just the other day, how amazing the events begin to take place almost sequentially, things that were in my letter that I gave them. I quote a lot of Bible verses for God to protect them, and then we began to see God just answer one prayer after another. So we were at peace, though we were obviously concerned. We were at peace that all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to His purpose. We were not presumptuous to think that He might not die, and we knew that was a distinct possibility. And if that occurred, we would have to accept that as the will of God. But we, as I said earlier, we did not lose any sleep. Although I must say there were days I work out of my house, my office is out of my house, when a doorbell rang and I didn't know who it was, I did have some moments looking outside to be sure it was not a military vehicle with some soldiers, because if that was the scene, I knew why they were there.
Brian, following up on something your father just said, were you ever faced with the dilemma of having to disobey anything that you were being ordered to do for the sake of obeying Christ?
Not necessarily. It was never to a point where, in a situation where I had to, they would say, you have to kill this person, and I'm like, they didn't do anything wrong, they're not an insurgent, and they said, we'd do it anyway. I was never faced with a situation like that, you know, thank God. But, you know, there were situations where, you know, like on Sundays, a patrol schedule was set up where somehow I was always have to go on patrol on Sundays. And at first I tried to tell them I would prefer not to go on Sundays because that's my holy day. That's where I want to go worship the Lord. And they said, well, listen, your particular job is something to where they need you out there. And so I would have to sit there and think about whether or not, and my particular job, two separate different jobs I had while I was there, well, I had men's lives in my hand, and I didn't want to be held responsible if someone happened to them.
Right.
I prayed about it a lot while I was there, and I realized that, you know, the Lord says, don't work on Sunday unless it's getting the ox out of the ditch. Well, I felt that me being on patrol with my brothers on Sundays was helping in a kind of a weird way, the ox out of the ditch, by protecting them and making sure. But I'd rather it be them to be in my hands because I know what I'm doing than someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to make sure their lives are in perfect, you know, are in good hands than someone I don't trust with their lives. So that's why I went out. And that was the only real thing that I faced as a Christian where someone was trying to have me disobey orders for my religious belief.
Yes, and obviously the strictest Sabbath of Sabbatarians believe that the acts of mercy or necessity would qualify for what you were just speaking of. But if you'd like to join us on the air with a question for Brian or John Otis, authors of Delivered by Angels, God's Providence for an American Soldier in Iraq, our number is 631-321-WNYG, 631-321-WNYG. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Kristen Buttafuoco. My father is Dan Buttafuoco of Buttafuoco & Associates, the personal injury lawyers. I've seen firsthand the time, love, and dedication that my dad puts into each and every case. His firm is dedicated to helping victims of accident and medical malpractice. It was his passion for his clients that inspired me to pursue a law career of my own. He has over 20 years of experience, so he knows exactly what to do for you. If you or a loved one have been injured, please call my dad at 1-800-669-HURT. That's 1-800-669-HURT. I know he will help you, just as he's helped thousands of other victims rebuild their lives. Hope hopefully one day I will be able to touch people's lives as my father and his staff have. So call Bud Fugo and Associates at 1-800-669-HURT and let them fight for you. 1-800-669-HURT. We help acne victims rebuild their lives.
Son, we got to talk about drinking.
I know.
I don't want you touching alcohol till you're old enough.
Yeah, I know, Dad. It's not a big deal.
Don't yeah, I know me, okay? And it is a big deal. Andre's drinking is just stupid.
Yeah, well, why'd you do it?
Look, I did it because we didn't know what we know now. Alcohol affects kids differently, okay? When kids drink, it's more dangerous. And you're my kid. And just because they drink doesn't mean you have to.
I know.
Look, son, I'm trying to help. I've seen what it does. I mean, you may think you can handle it, but when you drink, it screws up your judgment. Listen to me. This is real.
I know, okay?
Teenagers know everything. So talk about underage drinking before they know it all. Before they're teens. Start talking before they start drinking. And keep talking. To learn more about the dangers of underage drinking and what to say to your kids, go to stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Sergeant Christopher Norman here in Kuwait. I want to say happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year to my girlfriend, Christine, back in Huntington Station, New York.
WNYG Babylon, the spirit of New York.
Welcome back. Brian Otis, if you could share with us another account of how you believe you were delivered by angels in Iraq.
Absolutely. I think one of the best stories or instances that happened that showed God's providence was I can't remember the exact date, but we were on a night raid. We were having to we got information about intel about insurgents in a small little village in our sector, and our higher ups decided we were going to use a company wide raid to try and capture them. And we decided to do it at night. And so we prepped, we did all our preparations for it. We gathered the warning order, everything leading up to it. We went out there. And when you know for a fact that you're going out there and to get someone who's a known enemy, there's that little bit of fear that builds up because you know very well possibly there's going to be a gunfight. There's going to be someone shooting at you tonight. And it's kind of apprehensive because you know, well, wait, someone's going to be shooting me tonight. Well, you know, that little bit of fear builds up. And on the way out there, I remember we had searched through three or four houses and found nothing. On the fourth or fifth house, we go in there and we entered the house. And we knocked and we came in. We noticed the people, the residents were kind of nervous. They were very nervous about us being there. And it kind of threw up another red flag. Why are they so nervous? What do they got they're not supposed to have that we need to get? So we started asking the questions, and they were just, you know, giving us three or four different stories back and forth, so we knew something was up. And so, you know, my platoon sergeant said, well, go finish searching the rest of the house. Well, as we're going up the stairs, we hear someone rustling around in the one of the rooms, and so we realized we're going to have to do what we call a dynamic entry into the room. So I can't tell you exactly how we do it because I don't want to get in trouble with the military, but we entered the room, and I was the number two guy. And when the first guy broke off and I broke the opposite direction, I turned and was faced with a man, I don't know if he was Iraqi, but a man with an AK pointed right in my face. And going in, your weapon's on the down low. It's down, and so I have to bring it up. But it happened so quickly, my weapon wasn't up, and that weapon was trained right on the door, right at my face. And I remember hearing the click. And it happened so fast, and when I'm telling it, it's like slow motion. But it clicked, and I just came up, and it was over. And I sat there. And, you know, when the gunfire happened, when my weapon went off, the rest of the guys downstairs came up to see what happened. And we finished searching the house, and I looked at one of my comrades, and I was like, did he fire that weapon? And he goes, I think so. I was like, I heard a click. He goes, so did I. So we went and investigated and looked at the weapon, and if you know anything about the AK-47, that's the most reliable weapon on the face of the planet. You can throw it in mud, dirt, and sand, pick it up, slap a magazine, and fire it. Well, and we looked at it, and I was like, I heard a click.
Yeah, we all heard a click. So we looked at the weapon. There was a round in the chamber, and the firing pin had struck the back of the bullet.
Wow.
So the firing pin worked and hit the bullet.
Wow.
It did not fire.
Wow.
And I sat there, and once again, you don't think about it. I'm just thinking, well, I missed that one. And I got back, and I was thinking about, you know, the AK-47 misfire. And I'm thinking, wow, I can't believe the most reliable weapon who's known for never malfunctioning, never misfired, just misfired in my face. And it just seemed like, and when I started thinking about it, it's so hard to explain the sense of emotion that goes through, that went through me, knowing that that happened and knowing that God had providentially just stopped, did not let that weapon fire. And I was just in shock and amazement when that happened. And all my comrades that were there, they joked and said, man, you're one of the luckiest guys I know. And I was like, I just joke around with them, but it's not luck. It's God's providence. He protected me and the other men there, because who knows how many rounds he could have gotten off and how many of my boys would have gotten hit. That didn't happen.
Right. We before Pastor Plugman asks the question, we do have Julianne in Lindenhurst on the line. Julianne, welcome to Iron Sharpens Iron.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes, I have a question. How do you feel about President Bush's policy on the Iraqi war?
Me? I support my commander-in-chief and his decision. Whether or not what he tells us is the 100% truth, we will never know. I have to support his decision and what he did and we're fighting a war that we're not fighting a known enemy. It's a type of war where it's not clear cut. It's not like World War II where we had an enemy.
Right.
There's going to be an end to it.
Right.
You know, and our mission in Iraq is something of we defeated Saddam. We got rid of his regime. Now we're at a point where we're having to help the Iraqi people recover from it. And when people ask me, it's like, why are we still there? Why don't we just get out? Well, I like to point out the fact that from World War II, we have bases in Germany, bases in Japan. We're still helping the Germans and the Japanese rebuild from a war 60 years ago. I'm not saying we're going to be in Iraq and Afghanistan for 60 years, but when you go into a country and do the damage that we did, you can't just leave a people high and dry, as I like to say.
Right.
And I feel he's doing the best in his power he can do. And I feel that some of the criticism he's receiving is unjust, but I can see where they're coming from. Because the war has gone on for six years now.
I think it's a long time.
It's a long time, but it's something to where, you know, as a soldier, I'm behind my commander-in-chief 100%. He is a pronounced Christian. He believes, I don't know his religious, his background, but he very openly says he believes in the Lord Jesus and God.
Oh,
and I respect that on his level and in such a position as he is to say something like that. It gives me more confidence as a Christian soldier who's going to be on the front lines and knowing that I'm actually listening to a man who believes the same thing I do. It gives me a little bit more strength and helps me do my job a little bit better, knowing that maybe the reason I'm here is not to make money. It is for an actual good cause. And I believe we are there for a good cause, and I think he knows that.
Well, thank you, Julianne. You're going to be receiving a free $25 gift certificate to the Village Lantern restaurant in Lindenhurst. It's an excellent restaurant, and since you live right in Lindenhurst, you definitely have no excuse not to use that certificate.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Thank you so much.
Pastor Mike Plugman, you have a question.
Yeah, Brian, I wonder if you could share with the listening audience something about your everyday interaction with the Iraqi people. We here in the United States hear so much about the insurgency, but what about the common Iraqis? How is their relations with people like yourself, the American soldier on the street?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I experienced, I was in the Western Baghdad area, in smaller towns outside of Baghdad was where we operated. We dealt with the people. When we first got there, it seemed that people didn't like Americans. They were very apprehensive about
coming up to us and talking to us, and it was a chore to get them to talk to us. So we took it upon ourselves to try and do everything we can to help the people out, and we would intentionally take the MREs that the Army gave us for food on patrols and take them out on patrols and hand them out. The kids over there love the MREs for some reason. I think they are nasty, but the kids love them. And we would hand out, water, bottles of water, hand out candy. We were just trying to get the people on our side. And after a while, they did come around. And I think the people, they do like us being there because the insurgency from the investigations we did while we were there in our area were torturing the people. They were basically just keeping them under a reign of terror. If you talk to the Americans, you're dead, you and your whole family. And so they're very worried about talking to us, not knowing if we're going to help them. And so once they knew we were there for them, they started opening up to us. And going into the actual Baghdad city, we could tell, the people they're trying to go about their own lives and their own way of living. And when they do interact with us, I don't know how many times the mothers and children would come up and tug on your pant leg, and like, will hug my leg, or, the women come out and kissing you on the cheek and hugging you, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, we love America. And there are the people out there who don't like us. There are people who love Saddam, and they think that we did some evil wrongdoing by taking them out. So, but I believe as a whole, 75-80% of the people there love us, and they like us being there. And they think we're helping them out as much as we can.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's have at least one more occurrence that you consider to be an account of being delivered by angels.
Okay. This one happened at the very end of my tour. Near the end of my tour, I decided to start help driving the Bradleys a little bit to help kind of relieve the stress on some of the other drivers. So I started driving a lot near the end of the tour because the kind of the raids and the foot patrols started, backing down due to either, the new units coming in to replace this. We're trying to help the transition move over. So I was driving, and it was the second to last patrol of Iraq, ironically. And we were driving in West Baghdad coming down this one road, and I remember being extremely tired because it was a surprise patrol that we weren't supposed to go out. And they came to me at 5:30 in the morning and said, we got to go out. You need to get your stuff and get ready. We're going out in an hour. Oh, okay. So we get out there, and I remember being extremely tired and just chatting with the commander and the gunner and the guys in the back, when all of a sudden a big explosion happened, and the entire hatch was completely filled with some kind of soot. I don't know what, it's not dust, it wasn't smoke, it might have been a mixture of dust, smoke, and something, and I couldn't breathe. I could hear just things ricocheting around, metal hitting metal. And so I popped the hatch to try and air it out. When I aired it out, the Bradley was dead. The gas wasn't responding, the brake wasn't responding, the steering wheel wasn't responding. The DC's yelling down at me, go, 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 go. I was like, I can't, it's dead. I can't go anywhere, and we kind of rolled off to the side of the road. Well, then next you know, the other brother pulls up, and they get out to see if anybody's hurt, and I remember popping my hatch up, and I get out and I hop down, and that's when I realized my left arm was killing me. I was like, wow, this doesn't feel good. And that's when the Atlanta Journal-Constitution cameraman took a picture, and we decided to put it on the front page of the paper in Atlanta, which is kind of interesting. But I remember just going, wow, my whole arm hurts, and running around, and when we get back to the base, we put up the Bradley and took it back to the base, and at this time, we still know the extent of the damage to the Bradley and how big the IED was. When we get back, we start looking out it was actually called an EFB, and it's a fighter charge that melts down due to the heat of the explosion and shoots out laser. Kind of like I refer to a laser. It goes through steel like Swiss cheese. Nothing can stop it. And that's what we got hit with, and it had punctured through the hull of the Bradley into the engine block. And metal was ricocheting on the engine block, had gone through to where I was sitting, was ricocheting all around me, and was in the turret with the gun and the BC just ricocheting around. And we just get back and we start finding chunks of metal laying around the Bradley. And we're just like, whoa, it's part of the metal. And it's part of our Bradley that got used due to the explosion as something that's going to hurt us. And we were finding all these bits and pieces. And the guys were like, man, you know, this one was laying in my lap, you know. And I was like, yeah, but I had a little bit of a scratch on my shoulder due to one glancing my shoulder. And there was just holes everywhere where, you know, where we should have been sitting, there was a hole there, but because of the explosion, we got thrown forward and to the side, but it missed us. Like, all this shrapnel was just, there was holes all over the place. That it, not one of us got hurt. I took the brunt of it with the bat, you know, I hurt, bruising my knee, kind of separated my hip, and hurt my shoulder. But, and we get done, and hey, one of the guys who was there, who was a pronounced atheist, he even said, it was kind of funny, we would have talks all through the tour. He goes, if you believe in God, right now would be a good time to pray and thank him. And
wow.
I looked at him like, what? He was like, don't say a word, Brian. I was like, okay. Okay. And, you know, it was just the fact that, you know, the Lord, you know, saved all of it. It wasn't just me. It was the four other guys in the Bradley itself that were having metal just ricochet around that could have gone through them at ease. We all survived. And then the Lord put into his mind, you know, an atheist, well, maybe you should go, you should pray and thank, you know, he said, your God for praying. I was like, and, you know, it was amazing. It was the second last day of patrol when that happened. And it was just an amazing thing to see. I've talked to them since then, but it was amazing to see how the Lord kind of started working in his mind due to that one instance, how he got saved, and we all got saved. And I think he started realizing that, you know, maybe there is a God out there. I think he started to see that a little bit due to that, and that's what made that instance so special to me, is that we all got saved.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lord kind of started to work in his mind.
Amazing. And praise God for it. And we're going to be right back after these messages for our concluding thoughts from Brian and John Otis. I take my spiritual responsibilities very seriously, and we're willing to serve the Lord in whatever way we have to.
Dan Buttafuoco is a different kind of personal injury attorney.
Psalm 1:1 says, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. You will see that prominently displayed in our waiting room. We consider that an admonition from God that you should choose your lawyer very carefully. Somebody you know, trust, someone that's recommended to you by a pastor or a leader. If you do that, your chances of a satisfying and rewarding outcome are that much greater, and we'll be blessed.
At Dan Buttafuoco & Associates, Dan Buttafuoco heads a legal team that cares.
We help accident victims rebuild their lives, counsel them, minister to them spiritually, do everything we can to have a positive outcome. That's what our firm is all about.
When you have an injury resulting from somebody else's negligence, call Dan Buttafuoco. There are no upfront fees. The only fee is after you win your case. For a free consultation, call the law offices of Dan Buttafuoco at 1-800-NOW-HURT. 1-800-NOW-HURT.
I'm Lieutenant John Petrosanta, Assistant Officer in Charge of 2515, Navy Air Ambulance Detachment, Camp Buren, Kuwait. I want to wish my friends and family back home a happy holidays.
You're listening to The Spirit of New York, WNYG.
Brian and John, I'd like each of you to very briefly give your final concluding comments on this topic and what you want to be most engraved in the hearts and minds of our listeners today. Brian, first you.
Rick. My final thoughts are, I want the people who are listening to realize that the Lord is sovereign in every aspect of life. And he protects us, and whether we're in the military serving overseas in Iraq or Afghanistan, or we're at home driving down the highway, we don't know when it's going to come. There's a day God has set forth for us, and that day is going to come. I look forward to that day because I can't wait to go to heaven and see my Lord and Savior face to face. But I'm not in a rush to get there. There is a day to come, and I sleep better at night knowing that. And I slept good over there knowing that. And I want the people to accept, you know, just help me out a little bit.
Pastor John.
Well, you know, from my perspective, this is the purpose of Brian and I doing this book was we didn't plan on doing this book, but after God began to work, I came to the realization the story needed to be told, not for Brian's sake, for my sake, but as a demonstration that God indeed rules this universe according to His word, His truth reigns supreme, and God lives to intercede for His people.
Amen. And we're going to have to end it there, and we hope to have you guys back on very quickly. If you're interested in the book, go to triumphantpublications.org, triumphantpublications.org. You can order the book there. You can also leave a message on the website for Brian and John. Also, the phone number for the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Bohemia, Long Island, where my co-host, Pastor Mike Plugman, pastors, 631-218-1583, 631-218-1583. I want to wish you all a Merry Christmas, and remember that Jesus Christ is a far, far greater Savior than you are a sinner. I'm closing today's program with one of the favorite Christmas songs of the Village Lantern in Lindenhurst, Long Island. This is Christmas Eve from the Winter Carol CD by Black Forest Night. God bless you. Have a blessed, safe, and Merry Christmas.
I am sharp as iron, sharpened in hearts by Bonifuco and Associates.